Welcome to this podcast from Christ Church London. For more information and resources, please go to christchurchlondon.org.
As Andy said, we're in the middle of a series now. Here's some reading for those of you that want to follow along or do some background reading as we're going. First slide, please. Bill Hybels, church leader, The Power of a Whisper. Now you know where we got the sermon series title from. A great, really practical book, very, very inspiring, and written with his feet thoroughly on the ground. We would really recommend that. Secondly, Joyce Huggett, Listening to God. This is an older book, but a fascinating one nonetheless, in which Joyce Huggett tells the story of her own journey, learning to listen to God's voice, and how she combined lessons from the scriptures, listening to the Spirit, and drawing on lessons from the saints and mystics down the ages of the history of the church. I read it many years ago and found it very helpful. I trust it's not too dated now and that it will continue to be helpful today. And finally, Richard Foster on prayer. There is, of course, a correlation between hearing God's voice and praying to God. Richard Foster draws on many different examples from Scripture and again from the lessons of the church down the ages, and gives a wonderful, what I think is a really wonderful book on prayer. If you'd like to read something on that area, then we would thoroughly recommend that. One of the first holidays that Philip and my wife and I ever went on was to the Lake District. We were not seasoned walkers, and we went ill-equipped. I think we had one Kugel sort of rain jacket between us, and that was it. Consequently, on the first clear day, we thought we would not be too adventurous. We thought a circular walk, staying as close to the ground, as little climbing as possible, seemed to be in order. So that is what we intended. We got three quarters of the way round, and we found that our map reading skills were sort of equivalent with the amount of equipment we had, and we'd not realised that actually the last part of the walk took you up a small mountain. It was steep but small, and then back down the other side to our starting point. And we realised, therefore, we had a choice. Either we did that or we went three quarters of the way back round. So we decided, let's give this a go. As we went up, the clouds came down. And by the time we were at the top, we were in thick, dark cloud. To be honest, it was somewhat frightening. I mean, it was so thick. I've never been in cloud as thick. It was so thick, there were times I could hardly see my feet, let alone go forwards in any way. And for a while, we just stood there, nervous that if we took the wrong step, at best, we would go off the wrong path, and at worst, we would end up actually walking off the mountain itself. And as I've been preparing this talk, I found my mind often going back to that experience. I mean, in this broken and hurting world, and with us all, to some level or another, being broken, hurting people, we all find at times life feels a little bit like that, or direction in life feels a little bit like being on that mountain, doesn't it? If we were to take a show of hands here, all of us, I guess, at some point in the past, if not in the immediate moment, have known times where life is just dark and it's hard to know where to go. And we've been nervous that if we take the wrong step, it wouldn't work out too well. And this is one of the many reasons why learning to listen to the whispers of God and the promptings of the Spirit can be so incredibly helpful. Of course, we need to bear in mind that when we do hear those whispers and promptings, it's not as if we get a full map downloaded to us. It's not as if the dark cloud just removes totally so that we have 20/20 vision. It's much more like there's just little aspects that become clear. Paul, actually, in talking about this, the Apostle Paul says this in 1 Corinthians 13. He says, we don't see things clearly. It's like being on that mountaintop. We're squinting in a fog. We're peering through a mist. And Philip and I found that day as we stood there, initially still, that we found, of course, that the weather was moving. The clouds were constantly on the move, and over time, things started to clear a bit. On occasion, we could just see the rocks in front of us. At other times, we could see 6 foot in front of us. On occasion, as we started to make progress, we saw glimpses of the destination that we were aiming at some way below. But the leading of the Spirit is just so very similar. You don't see the whole thing, but you do get very helpful guidance. Of course, learning to recognize what's of the Spirit or not is also important, because just as we needed to be very careful on the mountain, I want to encourage us all to show appropriate care in learning to listen to the whispers of the Spirit. And numbers of us here, I have no doubt, would have stories, personally or of others, of times where we've responded to these promptings but found ourselves in difficulty, on the wrong path, hopefully not having literally stepped off the mountain. But care is consequently required and needed as a result. So what are we to do? How do we learn to trust the whispers of the Spirit? How do we learn to recognize what is appropriate for us and what is not? Well, the good news is that the Apostle Paul thought about this 2,000 years ago. And as with all things that we need to know about the spiritual life, so this one too is talked about in the Scriptures. And I want to read just a couple of verses to you. They'll come up behind me. But Paul, when he's writing to the Thessalonians, he says this. He says, "Do not quench the Spirit. Don't treat prophecies with contempt. But," he says, "test them all. Hold on to what is good and reject every kind of evil." And I want to take these couple of verses and just take three parts of them and just see what we can learn about how we can learn to recognize and trust these whispers. Because Paul is essentially, one of the things he's saying here is, don't give up on these whispers, even when it feels like it's just hard work. The way he puts it is, don't treat prophecies, which is the word the ancients used for those whispers, particularly when one felt they were for somebody else, don't treat prophecies with contempt. And the dictionary definition of contempt is to treat something as worthless or beneath consideration. It doesn't take too long when you're on the mountain and the cloud is pretty thick and you've been praying and asking, which way do I go? And there, and heaven has been silent, but you start to think, forget this idea of whispers. I really need to rely on myself. Something just as challenging is when well-meaning and kind friends come to us and they share what they think they've heard in terms of whispers, and it proves to be trite or simply not helpful at all. And clearly that Paul had had something of the experience with the Thessalonian church that they were not treating these things well. He says, they're worth having. Do not treat them with contempt. And I wonder whether the reason he said that was linked with the previous sentence, do not quench the Spirit. If we put the two together, it seems that he's saying, if you treat these whispers with contempt, as if they're worthless, it will result in you quenching the Spirit in your life. Now, who knows? The Holy Spirit's very important. Very important for you and me. It's the equivalent of, just as we need water in a garden to make it beautiful and verdant and lush, so we need the Spirit in our lives in order that our lives show forth growth and beauty and attractiveness. And when we learn to listen to the whispers of the Spirit, so it does just that. It leads to a flow of the Spirit in our lives. Think of countless occasions where this has been the case. Typically, whispers of the Spirit either lead to a sense of peace or to taking a step, often connected with risk. When we do it and we're obedient, it leads to a flow of the Spirit. Many of you here have heard me tell the story of how we came to start this church and some of the whispers involved with this. Prior to leading this church, we had been starting churches in the Midlands. And as we were starting to pray and think, maybe it is time to move to London, we thought maybe it makes sense to drive down one day and to have a look around and pray as we go. So we did that. We're on the M40 from Birmingham to London. And we receive a whisper from the Spirit via text message. Something that I've never had before or since. Unbeknownst to me or either of us, actually, there was a lady in our church, and every Monday morning, she would set aside time to pray for us. And on that Monday, she had felt that as she was praying, there was something she should say to us. And so she texted me. And the text said this: "You're like a plant that has outgrown your pot. It is time to be replanted." Now, the irony of this is any other day of my life, that would have been a very strange text. Any day up until that point, I would have not known what to make of it. And days after that, the same. But at that moment, on that day, when we are driving to this city to consider whether we should start a new church here, a time to be replanted seemed incredibly apt and appropriate. And as I look back, I am so grateful that we responded for so many reasons, but partly for my own life. The last decade or so in serving and working in this church and this city has been a huge personal blessing to me. Not treating what Paul called prophecy with contempt, but taking it seriously, led to a flood of the Spirit in my life. And I think it would be fair to say in many other people's lives as a result. See how the two are connected. Do not treat the whispers of heaven with contempt. For if you will listen to them, they will lead to a lush, fertile life in the Spirit for each of us. That's the first thing that Paul is saying. So he's saying, treat these things importantly, but he's also saying, don't be naive. Test them. Verse 21, test them all. There's never one you shouldn't test. Hold on to the good and reject every kind of evil. Interesting here, he's acknowledging that there will be a mixture. It's like being in the fog and trying to see clearly. Sometimes you get it right, sometimes not so. He's suggesting they'll be good and they'll be not so good. So test it and hold on to the things that are worthwhile. And what I want to do this morning is just suggest five questions that we can ask when we are wondering, is this a whisper from God? Five questions that we can ask to help us identify, is this right? And is that the right path? Or is this something to be ignored? So here we go. Five questions, make a note of them on your phone, and then whenever you need them, they're there, and you can use them. I trust they'll be of assistance. Number one, does it fit with the Bible? There we go. We're starting on safe ground, just where you'd expect me to start. The Spirit will never contradict himself. And God speaks with one voice. Therefore, the scriptures and the promptings that happen in the 21st century will be aligned. Let me give you an example. It's an example that a friend told me recently. In fact, she was kind enough to write it down and send it to me. Here's what she said. She said, a while ago, I fell out with someone who became very hostile towards me. It was hard to know what to do, but I felt I should pray that God would bless her despite her aggression to me. All right, let's just stop here. So there's some conflict going on, and this person thinks, I think that what I should do is pray for the person. Now, is that likely to be correct? Well, indeed, it will be, because right through the scriptures, we're told, don't take revenge. Don't persecute those who persecute you, but rather love them, or as Jesus said, turn the other cheek. So that makes total sense. She went on, I had no further contact with this individual until the next day when she seemed transformed. She was friendly and chatty and even came to sit next to me in one of my lectures. Deep in my spirit, I knew that my obedience and prayer had played a part. So you don't need to look any further when you know that what you're sensing aligns with the scriptures. Just to state, though, the opposite of that, consequently, when you're sensing something, or if you sense something that you know isn't aligned with the scriptures, you can ditch it, or as Paul says, you can reject it. You can be confident that the Spirit will never whisper to you, now, this is the moment to get your own back. You're not going to hear that. If you're married here, you're never going to hear, why don't you develop an intimate relationship with that person over there? It's not going to happen. You're not going to receive that because the scriptures are very clear about the power of covenant and the promises that we make to one another when we get married. You're not going to hear, yes, everyone else should be generous, but you hang on to what you've got. The scriptures are very clear. It says, be generous, whether you've got a lot or a little. Remember, generosity is nothing to do with the amount that you have. It's about with the attitude with which you hold it. The scriptures say, be generous, care for the poor, support the church, be kind with what you have, and you'll never hear the opposite. So that's number one, nice and easy. Does it fit with the Bible? The second takes us a little broader, if you like, and the question here is it the sort of thing that the God of the Bible would say? In other words, there are times where we hear whispers and promptings, and it's hard to find a single verse that sort of matches it, but we do think, no, this is in character with our Maker. This is in character with the God that we know through the Scriptures. Let me give you an example. We bought our first house at the height of the property boom in the 1980s. Now, I appreciate that for some of you. You're thinking right now, I had no idea there was a property boom then. I wasn't even alive then. Well, just bear with me and I will teach you some ancient history. We bought this tiny little two-bedroomed house. It was outside London. For what seemed to be an absolute fortune at the time, it was £69,000. It seemed unlikely that house prices would ever get any higher than the staggering heights which they were at the time. And we stretched with every fiber and penny that we had to raise enough money to buy this house. We bought the house. And over the next 5 years, we watched it lose about 50% of its value. Now, there's several problems with that. One is you have less money than you had. The other is because of the size of the mortgage that we had, we were not able to pay that back, and consequently, we couldn't move. Well, we didn't need to move initially, but then we started having a family. My first child, who is now 22, was Ed. And Ed has always been alive, was when he was 2 and is when he is 22. And there was one day when we had a friend with us. Friend's name was Steve. He's sitting in a chair. I'm sitting opposite him. And Philippa's just desperately trying to keep Ed going in this small space. You know, he's saying in every way he can with his body, get me out of here. Park is my destination. And our friend Steve, he sort of laughs and he says, you know, he said, if you want any more of those, meaning children, he said, if you want any more of those, you really need to get somewhere bigger. You need to start to think about moving. We laughed. We said, if you had any idea what our financial situation was, 50% of what it was worth, you wouldn't even mention such a thing. You know, he came back quick as a flash. He said, if you can trust for houses for the poor, which we had been able to do, we had a number, or for the homeless rather. If you can trust God for houses for the homeless, he said, you can trust God for a house for yourself. Now, time out. Where's the verse? Find me the verse that says, if you can trust for houses for the homeless, you can trust for a house for yourself. Well, I didn't know my Bible well enough to find that one. But I didn't need to, because there was another question I could ask. Is that the sort of thing that the God of the Bible says? And you think, yes, I think it is. Is it the sort of thing where he encourages us to believe him, give us our daily bread, praying that he would give us everything we need in order that we can serve him and so on. And so we started to pray. And you know, within 6 months, we had moved house and cleared all the outstanding debt. Second question, does the whisper reflect the God of the Bible? Does it reflect the Bible? Does it reflect the God of the Bible? Third question. Does it make you more the person that God made you to be? Does it make you more the person you were made to be? Will it grow you, stretch you, bring out the best in you? Or will it shrink you and make you smaller? Does it fit, to ask the question slightly differently, does it fit with your character, your convictions, and the direction you're taking in your life? Let me give you an example of this. Many years ago, actually, during the time where my house was shrinking in price, I was praying one day in a prayer meeting, and I had been asked to pray for the cities of this country and the cities of this world. I'd done as I'd asked, I'd prayed. Later, my pastor at the time, he came to me and he said, as you were praying, he said, I sensed they whisper from heaven. And he said, I felt I should say to you that I think your life is meant to be lived in cities. Now, that was exactly what I felt. So for me, my heart leapt at hearing this. But it was an incredibly strengthening and affirming and confidence-building thing to hear it from someone else so much older who I respected so much. And whilst I'd already carried that in my heart, the strength of those just those words helped guide and shape my life. And years later, that is still the case. I live in a city. I have no plans to go anywhere else at all. I want to spend my life in the city. I trust that we will have many fruitful years together serving this city. And who knows, maybe we'll be taken to serve in other cities as well. The prompting of the Spirit has, I think, made me more the person that I was meant to be. How about you? Maybe there's promptings and whispers that you have in your heart. You're like, well, I don't know. That would be a big step. Well, would it help make you the person that God has created you to be? It's the third question. Fourth question is this. Do my friends and those who advise me think that this is a good idea or value this? And just to say, I guess for most of us, we have friends, and I would encourage you, if you're new to the city, or you're like, man, this is exactly what I need. I need men and women who I can live life with. Those connect groups that we were hearing about earlier, from those that were interviewed, and many, many others right across the city are meeting for this service. It is a great way. It's a great way of connecting with others. We all need friends. I want to suggest, too, that we all need people to advise us. They may not necessarily be friends, but they're people we look to. And on occasion, we're able to go to them and say, what do you think? Just one comment about people who might advise you. Can I suggest they're people whose lives and the story of their lives is one that you respect? I mean, it just seems a little daft going to someone because you sort of think they're nice, asking for advice when their history, you know, don't go and ask somebody. Well, you understand what I'm saying. I'm going to get myself in real trouble if I go further down that angle. What do your friends and what do those you advise you think? And are you in the habit, at least with the larger decisions, of not just making them solo, but learning to make them and discuss them as part of a larger team? I shared last week that I was part of a team that sought to start 50 churches in the Midlands in 5 years. Ironically, one of the most oft asked questions after last Sunday was not so much about what I said, but did we do it? Did we start 50 churches? Answer, not quite, but a whole load more than if we hadn't tried. So we were pretty happy. So as part of that process of being part of that team, I was asked at one point in time, would I, with my family, move to Birmingham and start a new church? Well, that was a pretty big deal for us at the time. And we figured as part of testing all things, we should ask our friends. And a number of my friends were in my senior leadership team in my church at the time. They happened to be all coming round the next Monday evening for us to talk about a whole set of things. So we sit down together, and I just mentioned to them at the start, I said, oh, by the way, I've been asked to move to Birmingham. Isn't that a stupid idea, I said. And quick as a flash, one of them came back. He said, that's what I think you should do. You should move to Birmingham. Why don't you move to Birmingham? At which point, it was like the atmosphere in the room changed. Gender went out the window. We spent all evening talking about whether we should move to Birmingham. And by the end of the evening, I had four friends all looking me in the eye and saying, you need to really seriously consider this. We think this might be just the right thing for you. And implicitly, they were saying, and for us as well. Do you ask your friends? Do you have those who can advise you? Do my friends and those who advise think it is a good idea? Fifth and final question, does it glorify God? Does it contribute to his mission in the world? Or will it cause you to become preoccupied with yourself, your success, and your comfort? What direction does this take you in? And of course, the mission of God in this world is not just simply about starting churches and helping people grow in faith. We're called to a much broader and bigger thing, as we often talk about. It's part of what we want to talk about at Beneath the Surface a week on Thursday, is that everything, that the Lord has made everything, and it all matters. And therefore, as men and women of faith, we're called to renew every aspect and area of culture. I was in another part of the country recently chatting to a man in his early 30s. He said to me, I'm a consultant in frail geriatric care. He said, I work with old, frail people, and he said, that's what I love to do. And he said, there's a team of us. He said, we're looking at the next 20 years and how we're going to care for frail geriatrics in our part of the country. He said, it is a huge challenge. He said, the care homes are terribly widespread and we've not got enough of them. It's desperately difficult to get to them because of windy roads, and the proportion of the population in this part of the country that is old is much greater than in other parts of the country. He said, we've got a real challenge. And he said, the worst thing is, he said, I find myself on the team that's meant to solve the problem. And he said, oh, and there's another piece of bad news as well. He said, there's no leaders on this team. He said, we're all academics and carers. But he said, I guess, he said, I'm a reluctant leader. And he said, what I sense that the Spirit is saying to me is that I should lead the charge. What I sense the Spirit saying to me is that I should consider myself responsible for frail geriatric care in this part of the country over the next 20 years. He said, what do you think? I'm like, is this going to glorify God? Is this going to lead to a life of focus on your own success and your own security? Or is this going to stretch you and make you the person you're meant to be? He said, there's no way I would do this if I was just after a good career. He said, then it's probably the Spirit. It had to me all the hallmarks of an authentic whisper. It was going to push him out of his comfort zones. It was going to be good for people, and it would glorify God. Why wouldn't he do that? Why wouldn't we do that? Five questions. Fit with the Bible, fit with the God of the Bible. It make you more the person you are meant to be. Do your friends and advisors think it's a good idea, and does it glorify God or lead to a risk-free life? One other question that some of you will be asking. David, you are assuming that we're hearing something. How about when I'm hearing nothing at all? How about when I'm up that mountain and the fog is just thick in front of me and I can hardly see my feet? What should I do at those points in time? I want to suggest three things. First thing is this. Do the things that the Bible tells you to do. Actually, if you read that, you won't be short of things to do. I sometimes watch people, they go all passive. I'm waiting for direction. Well, you're best waiting on the move. You're best waiting doing things. Bible says, always care for those in need. Take responsibility for those you love and those around you and care for them. Pray regularly, share your faith, make disciples, be generous with your finances. All of that lot, plus some more, should keep you very busy whilst you wait. Do what it says in the Bible. Secondly, continue with whatever previous instructions or intent you've had. I've got a friend who's a phenomenal counselor. I've lost count of the number of people who've left that counseling room in a whole load better state than they started in. And one of the things that this person has often told me is they've said, when people come to me and say, I've lost my way with God, she said, I always suggest the same thing. Go back to the point before you lost the way. Go back to when it was going well and do those things again. And so you'll find that things will start to come together. Continue with previous direction. And thirdly, and finally, look for a sense of inner peace. When you're not hearing anything, sometimes we can make decisions guided by, does it give us a sense of peace? He, after all, is the Prince of Peace. And sometimes I've been known to try a decision on. I'll decide like this. I'll give it 6 hours or 12 hours or a week and see if it gives me a sense of peace. And if not, we'll take that decision off and do the alternative. Does that give a sense of peace? And peace will often guide us. I've just got one last illustration I'd like to give. Maybe the band could come back, please. Last week, I invited us all on the adventure of learning to listen to and respond to the prompts of the Spirit. This week, I want to invite us to do so maturely by learning to test all things and keep that which is good. It can lead to some very exciting outcomes. As you now know, if you've been here the last 2 weeks, we moved from a county town just north of London to Birmingham at one point in time. In that process, we found that our house sale was dragging on. We had a buyer, we'd agreed a date to move, to complete, and we'd arranged schools in Birmingham for our children to start. We were going to complete on the Monday, they were going to start on the Tuesday. Everything was set apart from the one thing that you actually need legally. And for those of you that haven't been through the house buying and selling process, what you have to do is you have to get to a point where contracts are exchanged. Then nothing goes wrong. Until then, if you're in the English house selling system, often things go wrong. And we had not got there, but everything else was agreed. And we got to the point where we had also agreed that if we were able, that we would move on the day we exchanged, completed the sale, do it all on one day. Now, this is not best practice. But I found myself, we're going to do this on the Monday, on the Friday evening, standing in the warehouse of the removal people. And they're saying to me, Mr. Straub, we don't understand. We never got a deposit from you, but right now we need all the money that it's going to require for us to move you. I said, I don't know whether we're going to move. We might move, we might not. They said, that's no good for us right now. We need to be at your house 7 o'clock Monday morning. Mr. Straub, we need the lot now. But they said, if you haven't exchanged, we do have some advice for you. Don't do it. Don't try and move and exchange on the same day. They said, we've seen it happen many times. They said, it always ends in tears. Well, I'm a big believer in taking the advice of professionals. But on this occasion, I couldn't get any sense of peace about doing so. For all sorts of reasons, both personal and in terms of the plans for the church plant, moving now rather than waiting several months, which was our next opportunity, seemed imperative and important. I felt like I should give them the money, but I had learnt by then that if you were going to spend your last lot of money, it's worth talking to your husband or wife first. So I left the room, I called my wife, I said, here's the deal, and I think we just got to do this. What do you think? She said, go ahead. And I really did feel like Abraham as I got my checkbook out. We used checks in those days. And I wrote a check. And for essentially the money we had, I gave it to the guy. He said, see you at 7 o'clock on Monday morning. 7 o'clock arrives. By 9 o'clock, half the house has been emptied. And I'm on the phone to our solicitor saying, this needs to happen today. He said, that's fine. He calls me back a little later. We can't find your buyer anywhere, he says. I'm thinking this is not good news. When you're going to exchange and complete on the day, you do not go AWOL early in the morning. We got to 11 o'clock, and the foreman of the removal team came to me and said, Mr. Stroud, he said, it's time to go to Birmingham. I said, oh, we're in no rush. I said, why don't we wait? I said, why don't we wait till lunchtime? We could go then. He said, no, he said, we've got to get back here again in a day and unload you. We need to go right now. I said, oh, okay. Called the solicitor again, no sign of the buyer. We get in the car, the van's taken off. I'm just drawing away from the curb, and Philippa turns to the children, and she said, you know, she said, the some days where you move to a new city, but you don't actually sleep in your house on the first night. We're halfway down the motorway when the phone goes, Mr. Straub, we found your buyer. She's willing to complete today, but she would like a reduction in the price. Well, who wouldn't like a reduction in the price? We have not got a lot of leeway at this point in time, but I explain what we can do, and I leave it with the estate agent to negotiate. We get to Birmingham. We're 5 minutes from the front door of the house that we hope will become ours when the phone goes again, and it is the estate agent. I'd like to say that I picked it up with this supreme sense of peace and ease, knowing exactly what would happen. I picked it up somewhat nervously, and the voice on the other end of the phone said, Mr. Stroud, you'll be very pleased to know you've just exchanged and completed. The house is yours. And at that minute, or as I put the phone down, we felt like we heard, as clear as anything, another whisper. And the whisper was, just as you've moved here through trust and faith, so now you are to do everything from this place with trust and faith. That's the way it was, like this being told how we were to live. And for the next 5 years, I can't tell you how many times we looked at each other and we said, this is one of those moments. It shaped the whole way we lived as we started a church in Birmingham and started churches right across the Midlands. I'd like to invite you this morning to the adventure of listening to the promptings of the spirits and learning to test them, holding on to what is good, and so live out the adventure. As I said last Sunday in one of the services, the Moravians were one of the greatest blessings to many, many nations of any movement of Christians ever. They were based in Germany, but literally 1 in 10 of the people that came to faith through them would go to other nations to seek to serve there. And as they got on boats, they would sing a song as they left. And the song would be, we will follow the Lamb wherever he goes. And that is the invitation this morning, for us to follow the Lamb wherever he goes.
Thank you for listening. For more information or for further podcasts and downloads, please visit christchurchlondon.org.